Most of us deal with anxiety from time to time. And if you think about it, I bet times that you've dealt with it were related to transitions of some sort. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Certainly hard for adults to deal with anxiety. I know it is for me. I bet it is for you, too. But imagine how much more difficult it could be for a youngster, a child who is suffering from it but can't really express what's going on. We'll talk about that today with my guest, Dr. Marcia Slattery. Dr. Slattery is a child and adolescent psychiatrist at the University of Wisconsin. She directs the UW Anxiety Disorders Program. And Dr. Slattery, thanks for joining us again. I really appreciate you taking time to be with us.
Good morning, Larry. It's delightful to be back.
I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. You may have some questions for us. Do you have problems with your child? Does your child feel anxious about going back to school, or your grandchild perhaps? What symptoms are you seeing? Any techniques that you have that would be that you found helpful? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And when we're talking about anxiety, sort of how would you define that?
Well, I think a good place to start out is really to remind everyone that being anxious and being a bit nervous about going back to school is very normal for all kids. So this is not unique to a certain group of kids. It's ubiquitous. And we all, you and I were speaking a bit before the show of remembering our early memories as well, as most people can. And that's because with all anxiety, the reason that we get anxious is anytime we're in situations of where there is change or there's something new. So think about a new school year. There are all sorts of unknowns that are part of that, right? You don't know who your teacher is. You don't know who the kids are going to be in your class. It might be a new building. Is the homework going to be too hard? Am I going to have the mean teacher? Am I going to be liked by the other kids? There is a range of different worries. And the tendency is we always think the worst, right? That's the nature of anxiety. And the nature of worries is it goes from small to the catastrophic pretty easily.
Yeah. And I imagine it differs, it's manifests itself differently depending on the age of the child.
Right. I mean, one of the large populations and groups that I see are kids that are in transitions, for example, like kids going from kindergarten to first grade. And a lot of people would say, how could that possibly be anxiety provoking? When in fact, think about it, kindergarten to first grade means a transition of suddenly I'm in a desk or I'm sitting at a table and I have something structured every hour and I have homework and I have specific lunchtime different than I had. Similarly, like going from grade school to middle school is huge because suddenly now I'm going to multiple different classrooms and I have a locker and God forbid my locker doesn't open. I've only got 3 minutes between each class. How am I going to do it? And then again, thinking of transitioning, for example, from high school to college. All big changes, and they map onto where these kids are at developmentally.
You wrote an article about this, didn't you?
I did. We did recently talk about this as well at the American Family Children's Hospital and with parents, et cetera, and multiple different venues because it is such a common problem that arises and some very specific things that are helpful to do.
My daughter is going to the same school. She's fifth grade now, finished fifth grade, going into sixth grade. Her school has all the eight grades in the same building, essentially. And so she knows the kids and maybe a little easier for her as opposed to like a jump from, say, fifth grade to middle school, sixth grade could be.
Right. Exactly. There are a lot of changes. For example, there are more kids because you usually have a consolidation of elementary schools to the middle school. And as I mentioned, suddenly now you're changing rooms for every class. So there are a lot of changes, a lot of transitions. And again, anytime there is an unknown, it evokes anxiety. That's normal. And so that's part of the process.
Claire in Mount Horeb has a comment. So let's go there. Claire, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. I'm a teacher of fourth and fifth grade students, and I think it's very common for kids to be super anxious about their new teacher and super fond of their former teacher, and they don't really remember that last year that former teacher was the scary new teacher.
Right.
So And we just really have to remember that. In the week or so before school starts, we often have the new kids come in just for a few minutes, stop by school, stop in the classroom. They can see the room, how it's set up. We don't use desks. We have tables, but each child has a cubby. They can see their own cubby, their locker, ask questions. The parent can ask questions. So that at least on the first day of school, they know where to go, where to be. I think that helps a little bit.
I think it's a great point, and a lot of schools similarly take that approach, and it really taps into what I was talking about before. If we're anxious about the unknown, being able to come and do a dry run, so to speak, is very helpful. Seeing where my classroom is, seeing where I'm sitting, meeting my teacher, walking the hallways if I've got a schedule where I need to be in different rooms, all of that is extremely helpful, and it's what we all call behavioral exposure, right? The things that I'm worried about, I'm going to go and do it, and I think that's a wonderful idea and a wonderful approach.
Claire, are you happy to be getting ready to go back to school?
I am, but I don't think kids realize that teachers are also anxious and that we even sometimes have dreams of the first day of school. And everything that could go wrong.
That's a good point. Anxiety starts from beginning to end, doesn't it?
It does.
Yes, it's a very good point.
Thank you very much, Claire, for calling. I appreciate it. And really good advice. She sounds like she'd be a good teacher.
Exactly.
Probably a pretty good one. Greg and Madison, your turn. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a toddler starting preschool in a couple weeks. I just wanted to know any tips or any advice I can get.
Sure.
That.
Yep. I think it's, again, one of those transitions where it's now going into the school system, even into the preschool. So similarly of what we were just talking about, if it's available to you and an option to be able to visit the preschool ahead of time, meet who the teacher is and who the other caregivers are and see the toys and have that approach of being able to take some of the unknown out is very helpful. And also talking with your child about how much fun it will be and the positives about it. We're talking about how we tend to expect the worst, but it's also important to help them see how much fun it will be. So, for example, a preschooler is going to be exposed to multiple different new toys and new friends to play with and new things to do. So I think really tapping into the things your child likes and speaking about it in a positive way of what's going to happen there will be very helpful.
So, yeah, so talking with them is really important.
Really important. Have the discussion and also listen to them. So one, talking about the positives, but also saying and listening, well, what are you worried about, especially kids that are a little older and can talk about and describe what their worries are about. If they have specific worries, then validate those worries. And we have to be careful not to be too dismissive and, oh, don't worry and reassure too much. But instead say, well, let's talk about that. And if that happens, what could we do? And develop a potential plan so that the student in the student setting, if you will, or with the peers in the school setting, has a plan about if it comes up, what can I do?
Sounds like a plan. I appreciate your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, you know, once the school year starts, or even before it, one of the things that we've tried to do is to get a routine going, even before, in terms of bedtime. Mm-hmm. You know, in the summer, things tend to get later. Emily is up later than she would be normally, and she gets up later, goes to bed later, gets up later. So we really need to get that routine established.
Absolutely. Another really good point about this month is golden for that, trying to get the sleep back on track. And one of the most important things to decrease anxiety in a child is making sure they get enough sleep. We tend to underestimate that. So having the sleep back on schedule, more similar to what it's going to be in a school day, having predictability at home, when we're having mealtime, when we're going to have bedtime, what our routine, and also an important point to think about, when these kids are going into school, and especially into grade school and middle school, high school, and they're having homework, to talk ahead of time, well, how are we going to approach homework this year? Let's talk about that and make that part of your routine on the front end. Many times people tend to forget that part, and suddenly within a month they're behind in their work and the parents aren't knowing what to do. The kids are stressing because they're now behind. And really think ahead of time, how are we consistently every day going to integrate homework time in our routine at home?
Yeah.
The earlier the better. Identify where you're going to do it. I'm a very big fan of having homework time for everybody in the family, including mom and dad and whoever else is at home. Let's sit around the table. We don't have to be all working on the work, but doing homework kinds of things. So it may be that we're reading the paper, we're paying the bills, we're also doing our other work, but you're there and you're showing your child that you're doing this kind of work too. And just being in that space is tremendously helpful for them. It's very reassuring and calming. They know they're going to do it every day, same time. There's a spot that's designated for it. The TV is off, it's conducive for it, and that makes a huge difference of decreasing the stress of the school year as well.
Yeah. Our guest today, Dr. Marcia Slattery, UW Health Child and Adolescent Psychiatrist, Director of the UW Anxiety Disorders Program, talking with her, obviously, about back-to-school anxiety in children of all ages, be it kindergarten all the way through college. I hope you'll call in with your questions, comments, or maybe experiences to share at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And let's go to Nancy in Grafton next. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, good morning.
Morning.
I have a little great-granddaughter down in Memphis. She is going to go into second grade. She tested out at eighth grade level. Her mother is a teacher. Her grandmother is a teacher. Not her great-grandma, but anyway, what do you do with a child like that who is far beyond her years mentally, but do you keep her in the same grade that she ordinarily would be in? Are there problems if you would bump her up a ways?
Mm-hmm.
What's your opinion?
Now, it's a great question. In situations like that, you try to maximize the child's learning, obviously, and her abilities. But we also have to remember that developmentally and socially, she's back at the younger age, correct? And so trying to have her integrate socially with those older kids isn't going to work well either, because she's not worked through those stages. And
yeah.
So I think it really brings home the important point of not emphasizing too much that we've got this brilliant child, which is important certainly to continue to support and encourage and maximize her learning, but to also say what else is important in a child's life. What other activities are you in, and what sort of play dates are you having, and what do you like to do for fun? And really try to put it into a balanced perspective of who is this child at this age. That way, hopefully, they maximize learning, as you well point out, but also can be a kid.
Yeah.
She's the oldest of four children. And somebody told me that it would be a smart idea to have her learn a foreign language, that would use up some of that energy, you know, that she probably is not getting in her classroom.
Uh-huh. You know, it's certainly an option, and different school districts look at things differently in terms of what the options are for learning. So that may be an option. But again, I think that I would look at how is she also having fun with other kids, exploring other interests and things, too, in addition to that learning part, just to really have a balanced developmental experience.
Yeah, very good points. Thank you, Nancy, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Michelle in Rochester, Minnesota, a chance to join us. And we'll do that in just a minute. But a reminder again, Dr. Marcia Slattery, our guest. I'm Larry Mehler. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in with your questions as we talk back to school anxiety in children at 1-800-642-1234. And please stay tuned, because at 11:45, we're going to find out about why keeping kids current on vaccinations is so important. But right now, learning with Dr. Marcia Slattery how to help your children or your grandchildren deal with anxiety about heading back to school. And Michelle in Rochester, Minnesota, thank you so much for waiting. What's on your mind?
I just have a question. I have a daughter who's 13, and she's had some bouts with anxiety for probably 3 or 4 years. And it seems like the one common thing, but in all of this, is that she has a hard time, like, talking about how she's feeling. And because we can see when she starts kind of getting revved up, having a hard time making decisions about things. I think she doesn't want to be, she doesn't want to be wrong, or she doesn't want to look out of place, or I don't know. You know, she's athletic and she's smart, and I think she has high expectations of herself. So I guess I'm just wondering if you have any advice about just how to alleviate some of her stress, and knowing that it's okay to make a decision that might not be the best, or, you know, or it might not be what she wants, but I don't know. It's a little hard to explain.
Well, it sounds like that's, I was trying to think back when I was 13, and that sounds like me a little bit. What, Dr. Slattery, what do you suggest? Yeah,
I think what you're describing is extremely common, and you make a very good point bringing up the whole issue about anxiety can be present in these kids to differing degrees and can show itself in different ways. So while we were talking about, you know, ideally, and still you want to encourage talking about what the worries may be, but also some kids, they keep it very much to themselves and they're quiet, and or they may not identify it as anxiety, but you see it, right? Like you had a wonderful example about difficulty making decision, and you're exactly right. It's often related to, I don't want to make the wrong decision and make a mistake. These kids tend to be somewhat perfectionistic, and they want to do well, and they're pleasers many times, a lot of these kids. And so sometimes what helps them is, again, trying to prepare and reviewing what is a typical day going to be like, exposing them to what they're worried about, again, meaning going to the school, reviewing who is going to be their teacher, what their schedule will be. If they have to make choices, sometimes it's very helpful for them, instead of saying, well, what color pen would you like to bring with you to class? Instead, say to them, would you like a blue or a black pen? And narrow it down rather than keeping things very broad and more ambiguous. That's really what they struggle with a lot. Try to bring it down and boil it down to what is relevant to them. They need to have a plan. They want to feel they're ready. They're on their game, and I'm set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just been so interesting because I there's so many things that she does well and she has success with, and, you know, she's real helpful, but it's when she goes through these moments, you know, as a parent, it's like I want to help her and support her, but I don't want to feed the monster, we call it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. You want to address it, but you also don't want to make that's who your child is. So again, be sure that we're trying to put it in perspective of also saying, let's go have some fun today too, and not over focus on this area that you're stressed about. Try to find outlets for your kids. It's a really good point in terms of, for some children, this really is stress provoking. So we're talking about, it's normal to feel somewhat anxious to go into the first day of school, but for some kids, it really is extremely stressful and much more anxious, anxiety provoking. And so we want to address it in a way that's helpful for them as well, and helping them feel prepared, feel what they know what's coming, but also then to say, let's also think about other things we're going to do today. Let's go have this fun activity. Let's go to do lunch. Let's have a play date. You know, we really want to integrate that positive social interaction, so that, again, what we're modeling for them and trying to help them with is putting it into a balanced schedule sort of approach, if you will, of the studies and the schoolwork is very important, but also so are friends and so are activities and things that we're doing as a family, et cetera.
Yeah.
So kind of acknowledge what's bothering her and also remind her of things that are good and that she can look forward to.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay. Thanks, Michelle.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, too.
And Amy in St. Paul, Minnesota, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I was just listening to the last caller, and that's kind of sums up what my daughter has, except she's 11 and she's going into sixth grade, so she'll be going into a middle school. She has anxiety about a lot of things, but hers right now is high because of the middle school thing.
Right.
But at night time is when her when she gets really ramped up,
mm-hmm.
and she says she has problems breathing,
mm-hmm.
which I try to say, well, you're breathing, right?
Right.
So, and she is getting breath, and that's not, but it's just that constricted feeling she's
right.
getting.
That feeling,
and
right.
So, yeah, where it's trying to always gasp for breath.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any techniques or anything for relaxation? We've tried, I'm really pushing it, but I think she feels like she has to solve everything right away. So, that's the other thing, the perfectionism that comes into play,
mm-hmm.
you know, where she thinks, well, I shouldn't even be having this. So I'm kind of up against that. And
right.
then also trying to teach her relaxation techniques. So,
right. One point I would add to that for the listeners is you mentioned that she has difficulty catching her breath or feeling short of breath. It's just this whole area. Kids that have a bit more anxiety where they're struggling with it more than just, oh, I'm worried about the first day of school, where it's about other things, will often have physical complaints. And typically they will occur in the morning before school or at bedtime. Before school, in the morning, they often occur because, oh my gosh, the entire day is ahead of me. All the things that could go wrong, they go over in their head and they play it. And of course, as we talked before, we go to the worst case scenarios. Stomach aches are headaches, stomach aches are common, resistance, crying. And then at bedtime, when you think about it in the evening, why it tends to occur again is because we're not so busy. Our brains are not distracted. So suddenly, we're not having to pay attention in the classroom or be with our friends, and the worries start coming back in. And I often talk to kids and parents about it's like open gym. They come in and play, and all of a sudden you've got all these things you're thinking about while you're trying to fall asleep. So relaxation things are very important and very helpful. There are different things that people find helpful. Doing some relaxation such as yoga moves before bed, talking with your kids before bed. We do mindfulness interventions of really focusing on breathing. All those things can be very helpful. Many times doing things that help them fall asleep but not activate their thinking a lot, like crossword puzzles or connect the dots or coloring. Those sorts of things help our brain kind of unwind and shift from high gear of having to be on as they have all day to sort of low cognitive power, low brain power, as I describe it, which helps your brain kind of smooth and kind of go into a sleep, which is helpful too. Sometimes not having something to do for these kids is extremely hard. They need to be occupied all the time. We just don't want them doing high brain activity right before sleep because it's going to be hard to fall asleep. And then they worry about, I can't get enough sleep and I'll be tired tomorrow. It's a new worry. So
Exactly.
So you want to find some things that help. You know, the way I describe it is like if you're going along at 55 miles an hour, you don't suddenly stop on a dime. You downshift. And it's very similar in this regard. You're on, you're listening, you're learning, you're with your friends, etc. You're with your family at home. And now you have to help your brain relax as well. So sometimes doing activities that help your brain stay focused so it's not too wide open for some kids. And yet not too activating is important. So you don't want to do TV, you don't want to do computer. You want to have things that keeps them occupied, but not activated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great, thank you.
Bedtime back rubs
right.
for my daughter.
Yeah.
She loves a back rub, mm-hmm. and it's a nice relaxing thing for her just before the lights go off.
And just spending time with them, you'll be amazed at what they'll talk about. If you sit up there and they're laying in bed, it's a wonderful time to connect with your kids.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Amy.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Diane in Rice Lake, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning. Thank you for all the good comments and suggestions. I'm calling with more of a suggestion than a comment for returning adults, non-traditional students. As a retired technical college instructor, I saw a lot of students who hadn't been in the classroom for 10 or 20 years. And there was a lot of anxiety
mm-hmm.
about
mm-hmm.
that. And these are students who maybe weren't real successful
mm-hmm.
when they were in the classroom. And so my suggestion, and this may be something for younger people too, is to let them know what they're going to be feeling and going through and that it's normal. I used to tell my students, you will be in a cloud. mm-hmm. for about 6 to 8 weeks. And it's normal to feel a lot of confusion, to feel frustration. There will be tears, and that's normal. But you need to stick it out. And once that time has passed, usually the clouds clear, and mm-hmm. it starts making perfect sense, and you're able to keep rolling down the track. It's mm-hmm. like starting a train from a dead stop. Yep. Takes a lot of energy to get it going. Once it's going, things roll along much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are really good points. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Diane.
You're welcome. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Appreciate the call. I frankly love to I teach some classes, and it's always great to get a returning student in the class amongst all those 20-year-olds. Mm-hmm. They're often feeling a little nervous and anxious, but she's also right that after a few weeks, the young students love to have them in the classroom.
Right. Right.
And they wind up taking a nice leadership role. So that's very good points. Mm-hmm. By the way, you can join in, too, if you have an experience to share, or maybe you have a question as we talk about school anxiety in youngsters. Certainly look forward to hearing from you at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And the more severe you touched on that a little bit. Maybe we can talk a bit more mm-hmm. about that. How do we know when, this is just not the normal, this is a more severe, and what do we do?
Right. Exactly. So as with everything, things can happen on a continuum, right? So you have very mild, normal anxiety, which we all have, to having more pronounced anxiety disorders and illnesses, and certainly what we treat a lot in our anxiety program and see a lot of kids for, because it is very common, and we may have spoken about this before. Anxiety disorders and significant anxiety problems in kids are incredibly common, affecting up to 1 in 4 kids.
Wow.
1 in 4 kids. It's among, if not the most common mental health symptom that kids will experience, that and that stress component. So we have to be really attuned to identifying it as well. And in kids that have more problems, so we're talking about a lot of kids will feel nervous and they'll have jitters, et cetera. And for the most part, a lot of the things we're talking about will take care of that. Reviewing the school, touring it, meeting the kids, etc. And within a couple days, they realize their worries about all these horrible things that could go wrong are in the past, and it's okay, and we're back in the groove. Some kids, however, it persists, and it's extremely stressful. So that's where you'll see more of persistent stomach aches in the morning, or crying, or resistance to going, and similarly at night, that they have difficulty sleeping. Another very common symptom that we see in kids, especially in the grade school, are what parents often will describe as a meltdown. When these kids come home, they will have just this, anything might trigger it, and just this tremendous emotional outburst of crying or yelling or screaming. And yet, when you talk to the teachers, interestingly, they'll say, this is the perfect kid, and they're calm, and they're helping, they're wonderful. And sometimes the parents will say, who is this kid you're talking about? And a lot of that's related to, it's not that these kids are not worried and tense at school, but they are, but they're also holding it together. They don't want to show this on the outside at school. They're very performance-driven. Oftentimes, they're very concerned about doing well, pleasing, following the rules, etc. But it comes at a cost. So by the time they get home, everything has really built up, or as I describe, it's like a sponge that keeps absorbing water all day long. They hold it in, they hold it in, they hold it in, and they get home, which is a safe place for it to come out, and one little thing may trigger it, and you get, as I describe, the gate opens, and suddenly you've got this on your hands. So if you're seeing that more, and this is really starting to get in the way, this child does not like to go to school, or it's really taking a toll, then I usually say, talk with your primary care provider or mental health provider or someone to just say, let me run this by you, or let me bring my child in just to see and do an assessment and maybe get some pointers on things that might help. Because the problem with anxiety is it's very quiet and it's very silent. These kids are not going to come up to you and say, I'm really worried. and I have all these worries. You really have to be tuned into it. And many times, as I described before, they're not aware of it as anxiety themselves. It's often not picked up in the classrooms. Anxiety is not the squeaky wheel,
right?
They're not the kids acting up. These are the kids that are doing extremely well. So why would you think there's a problem? But oftentimes we call them the silent sufferers because they're holding it in and the bar keeps getting higher and higher and the tension keeps building. It starts to take a toll. And indeed, not only do they feel more stressed, but it can also take a physical toll. And that's a lot of what our research is focusing on, too. How does this persistent and chronic anxiety and stress, which a lot of these kids have, start to take a toll on our bodies? And that's obviously very important because they're growing and developing in their brains as well.
Are you seeing any trends or learning anything from your research in that area?
I think what we're finding is, again, the chronic stress is really a problem. It starts to take the toll on these stress hormones, et cetera. And we have to be aware of that and really do the early. We have to know what are the chronic stressors for kids. For example, it might be learning problems. It might be peer problems. It might be the environment, and really do some interventions earlier on to be able to say, can we intervene in this way so that we don't develop the problems later? Because a lot of these anxiety stress-related disorders into adulthood, and interestingly, if you speak to adults, they'll say, you know what, when I think back, this all started when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But I wished I would have done something. But they're now struggling with heart disease and cancer and a variety of different stomach problems, you name it. These are all anxiety stress-related problems. So it builds up and it takes a toll. So the earlier we can intervene, the better.
Dr. Marcia Slattery, our guest today from the University of Wisconsin. Great to have her along. Join in at 800-642-1234. Adam in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. The last couple of comments actually led very well into my question. My partner of 5 years, we're both relatively young, about 24, and she grew up in a household, a single-parent household, and her mother had mental illness. And she was, again, very much a perfectionist, very highly driven, and had a lot of stress in her life. And because of the environment that she grew up in, she never really learned, I think, how to deal with that stress. So I'm curious as to whether you have any insight or thoughts on adults who, because of their childhood experience, have a really hard time dealing with anxiety.
Well, you make a good point, as we were talking about, that a lot of times it starts in early childhood. And I think for many of the adults, one of the most important things is if they're involved with kids themselves, to be able to identify it and say, here are things that these kids can do. But for themselves to also say, taking much the same approach, this is what I'm experiencing. And I always say, how is it getting in the way? Or how do I know I have it? And how can I take a look at this and develop a plan or go and talk with somebody about what I can do to take care of myself, much like we do with any other medical disorders, right? If we have something that we realize our blood pressure is a little bit higher or we're having some stomach problems more than we would like, find out what can we do. We recognize it now more as an adult. And what are the options about how I can intervene to now, as I go forward, be even healthier? But a big issue, I think, as you well point out, is saying, how do we identify it earlier now when we look back and we see that this does happen with kids? And the other point along that line, if I may, is that for parents, as you're thinking about it, be aware of your anxiety in the home, because a lot of times kids will do fine, but they're looking at their parents and saying, oh my gosh, my parents are really nervous and anxious about me going to school. Maybe I should be. And so parents modeling for children is something we need to keep tabs on. And parents need to sort of self-reflect on, what am I telling my kid? Am I telling my kid this is going to be really scary and really hard? And, you know, if anything happens, call me right away, versus really empowering that child that you may have these things happen and let's have a plan about how to handle it. So parents need to monitor their own anxiety, because kids will definitely pick up on it. And that can contribute to them developing anxiety as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Adam, I appreciate your call. Thank you so much. Lorraine is about 50 years old, doesn't remember a lot of transitioning when she was a kid. It was a little more sink or swim, but there also weren't a lot of messages that kids should expect to feel stressed or anxious about. Are we maybe making it worse by focusing so much on being, you know, making it a big deal?
I think that it's a good point. We don't want to over-focus on it, much like we were talking about before and the tension and whatnot. But I think sort of saying this is common, and some kids may not have worry about it and it's not an issue. But what we're talking about is a lot of people do, because it's, again, the unknowns and just saying we're going into it and here's what we're doing. But I think the flip side of not focusing on it too much is also not addressing it. And that's been a problem for a long time. And then the kids get the message of, well, maybe I shouldn't talk about this then. And we don't want to do that too. So it goes back to our comments earlier about how do we put it in balance and into perspective so this doesn't become who the kid is about, but it's an important part to address. But let's also address these other pieces of the pie. What do I like to do for fun with my friends? What am I doing with my family? How am I doing other things of groups or activities I might be involved with? So I think the balance piece and integration is really important.
And another listener wanted to know about how to tell the difference between depression and anxiety in children.
That's a good question. Depression and anxiety often ride together. I think that identifying kids that if they're more an irritability and negative mood and more depressed mood can certainly be part of that. But if you have a question, typically kind of, again, starting with asking your child kind of how they're feeling or what's, I like to start with kids and saying, how's your day going? And is there anything that we could make better? Or is there anything getting in the way to waking up in the morning? It's a good day. Is it that you just feel sad? Is it that you feel scared about things? Do you have any specific worries, etc.? But if you see your child not wanting to engage with other kids, if you see your child having difficulty paying attention and concentrating in class, if it feels like they have low energy, their sleep is disturbed, where you feel like, you know, when I look at other kids this age, they seem to be struggling, I'd go in and check it out with your primary care as a starting point. I think it's a great place to say, what do you think?
Tony and Madison, thanks a lot for calling. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for the call.
You bet.
For allowing me to speak. In school, I did speak. I raised my hand. But when we got out of free time, the bullies, the ones that didn't know it, weren't smart enough to answer the questions or didn't like you because you were trying to get A's and B's, didn't care about school, just wanted to pick on people. There are a lot of kids that were anxious about going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So bullying can add to anxiety.
Definitely. Right. It adds that sense of threat, right, exactly, and the unknown and feeling vulnerable. So, you know, that the anti-bullying is a huge emphasis, but it's still occurring, as we know. It's a very good point. The environment's important.
Absolutely, and I'm glad it is being addressed more fully now in schools these days. We're certainly hearing more about it. But, Tony, you may raise a very good point. I want to get Patty involved as well. Patty and Madison, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. I'm calling regarding my 9-year-old son. He is the most well-behaved kid, both at school and at home. We've had absolutely no issues with meltdowns or any other emotional problems with him. He's been going to preschool since he was 6 months old. So being in a new environment is not really new to him.
Mm-hmm.
About 2 years back, when he had a transition from second grade to third grade, we noticed that around Sunday evenings by 5 o'clock, his mood would change, you know, and he would kind of not be that happy anymore, as if the weekend is ending and he has to go back to school. And so that night he would kind of get up once or twice and come to my bedroom.
Right.
And just say that I can't sleep. And so this has been going on for 2 years now, and it is only on Sunday nights. It's never on the weekdays.
Right, yeah. And it's that anticipation, right, that anticipation of looking ahead. The whole week is ahead of me. And they expect all the things that they need to do, all the things that could go wrong. So that's a very common time as well. Sometimes it's helpful for kids like this, too, in order to make that transition on Sunday nights. Have someone they check in with on Monday mornings that they like. It might be the teacher. It might be the school nurse, et cetera. But they know there's someone there who's going to be ready and wanting to greet them on Monday morning. Sometimes that transition back on the Monday morning can be helped with that. It decreases some of that worry and feeling like I'm on again for 5 more days.
I was just thinking about a dream I had the other night again, where I woke up, and the first thing on my mind was, oh my gosh, I've got that class that I had signed up for and never dropped, and now it's the final exam time.
Exactly, the points that bring us back, right? Very common.
Oh my goodness! And I thought, man, that's been a long time ago, but. anxiety can still exist even in those of us who are long gone from school.
Absolutely.
Well, I tell you what, Dr. Slattery, it's great to have you with us today. I'm sorry we don't have more time to talk, but I'm glad that you had a chance to come by, and I hope you'll do it again.
Thanks, Larry. It was great to be with you.
Dr. Marcia Slattery is a UW Health Child and Adolescent Psychiatrist, directs the UW Anxiety Disorders Program. It was great to have her along. It's great to have tools to help our children deal with anxiety that can come with these big transitions, doesn't it? Coming up next, we're going to find out why it's so important also to keep our children up to date on our vaccinations. I hope you'll stay with us right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.